Hello, everybody, and welcome to the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. I'm your Sun Sounds volunteer reader. I'll be reading articles published by the Geographic Society in December of 2024, so I hope you enjoy the program. I'll begin with this article titled, These Ancient Forests in China Produce the World's Finest Tea. It's written by Justin Jin. In a high-elevation forest on Jingmai Mountain, dawn broke over a green peak, bathing an ancient tea tree in warm light. A 4-foot-wide trunk, along with enormous branches stretching up into a canopy of leaves, gives it an impressive bearing. Nothing like the smaller tea shrubs often packed into tight rows on commercial farms throughout China. But this tree, deep within the southwestern Yunnan province, was different, and it served a different purpose altogether. A married couple named Ai Rong, 41, and Qi Lan Fang, 36, had gathered with their elderly parents in front of the tree, chanting a prayer in the Blang people's language, spoken by the indigenous community throughout this region, where 5 tea forests, collectively the oldest and largest on the planet, are cultivated. To the untrained eye, the tree might have been merely part of a forest, but for the family, it was the heart of a living shrine. They prayed to their tea spirit tree, asking an ancestor named Pa Aleng, now considered a deity, to deliver a strong harvest. It's 1,000 years old, I said proudly, pointing to the tree's large trunk. In recent years, however, his faith has seemed to be continually tested. At a time when the region's highly specialized tea has gained widespread attention, commanding impressive prices, there are ever more unpredictable natural forces to contend with. Tea is the world's most popular beverage after water. Globally, people drink an estimated 45 billion gallons of it each year in a wide range of styles, from green to black, to oolong. While these varieties exist because of different processing techniques, they all originate from the same fundamental ingredient, Camellia sinensis. The species of flowering evergreen has traveled the world, most notably when the colonial British brought it to India in the early 19th century, breaking China's monopoly. Today, however, one specific style remains inextricably tied to Jingmai Mountain. For more than a millennium, the Blang people, along with another indigenous group called the Dai, are believed to have continuously maintained these ancient groves of Camellia sinensis, variation Asaminka, a subtype that produces black tea, including the mountain's dark, rich, pu'er tea. The coveted blend has been referred to as a drinkable gold among some tea connoisseurs, in part because many producers ferment it for a minimum of 10 years, which creates a deeper flavor and increases its worth. Among China's growing affluent class, the nutty, earthy, and slightly bitter concoction has been compared to fine wine. It softens and becomes more complex and collectible with age. I and his family own a plot of about 4,000 trees, but had spent years struggling to earn a profit. Then in 2015, they decided to partner with a premium brand that sells high-end pu'er. They now run a farming collective that employs workers throughout the area to help process tea from 37 different households, yielding about 1 ton of product annually. The tea is pressed into circular cakes and aged, then packaged and sold for $330 per 12.6-ounce cake. Within Chiang Mai, the average income is significantly higher than it was 2 decades ago. For Ai and Ki, such gains and their entrepreneurial success have led to a combined income of around $40,000 a year, more than the average household in the nearby city of Humen. 2 years ago, UNESCO formally recognized Chiang Mai Mountain as a World Heritage Site, an honor reserved for places that provide unique cultural value. It is the only site related to tea cultivation. Perhaps not coincidentally, the price of tea from Chiang Mai has roughly doubled since the idea of a certification was introduced more than a decade ago. The region's 6,000 residents use natural practices to manage 3,900 acres with over 1 million trees. But their model of sustainability is facing new stresses from climate change. In the spring of 2024, the region was coping with its most severe drought in 60 years, and an unusually warm winter had brought an unexpected worm infestation to the peak that Ai's family was preying on, threatening the precious tea leaves just before harvest. The Blang people's tea spirit is based on a real person. Around the 10th century, according to oral history, Pa Ai Leng led his people to settle in Chiang Mai, where he discovered the medicinal properties of wild tea plants and began to domesticate them. Near the end of his life, Pa imparted wisdom that's still recounted by farmers like Ai and Ki. "I can give you cattle, but they might die of diseases," Pa is remembered to have said. "I can give you gold, but you might squander it. So I am giving you tea trees, which can provide riches for generations." Chiang Mai's closely managed lands may appear untamed in contrast to terraced monoculture tea plantations seen throughout the world, but the canopy of trees provides shelter for tea plants that grow best in shade. A vibrant understory of ferns and herbs carpets the forest floor, fostering a rich habitat for fauna while helping the soil retain vital moisture. The tea plant sanctuaries are also divided into distinct pockets, strategically partitioned by forest that separates one plot from another to stop the spread of diseases and pests. The Blang people believe that everything has a soul, a reminder to leave nature undisturbed. So in tending the forest, they avoid pesticides and herbicides, as well as aggressive practices such as pruning. Ki cuts grass between the trees only twice a year, and with a knife. New research shows that the agroforestry techniques practiced in Chiang Mai continue to be effective. A recent study by Minzu University of China found that tea produced from the mountain's high-altitude trees was less bitter than tea cultivated from trees at lower altitude, and the sustainable farming methods support a significantly higher biodiversity than commercial tea gardens. Chiang Mai's tea's current price is about 6.5 times higher than that of typical plantations. Despite his family's owning thousands of venerable tea trees, Ai lived in poverty during his childhood because demand for their product was non-existent. During the second half of the 20th century, China's focus on mass production from high-yield, large terrace plantations left little room for the old trees' labor-intensive harvests. While growers across other Yunnan tea mountains raise their ancient groves to plant younger, more productive trees, people of Jingmai remained steadfast in protecting their arboreal treasure. Their commitment was reinforced by practical constraints. Within modern roads, their old trees were ill-suited for mass production. The indigenous communities persevered with their seemingly unkempt forests. Jingmai's fortunes changed around 2000 when the Chinese government invested in new roads and electricity for rural areas. Slowly, new tea buyers began to arrive at the mountain, even as increased access led to more challenges. Some villagers destroyed parts of the forests to harvest timber for new construction. Others applied harmful chemicals to their trees and pruned aggressively to boost profits. By 2003, Sue Guowen, a retired primary school teacher who claims to be a descendant of Pa Aleng, felt the need to act. At community meetings, he invoked Pa's purported instruction to protect the forests, like your own eyes, arguing that the continued preservation of ancient practices and traditions would bring growers long-term benefits, even if they had to sacrifice short-term yield. Village chief Ai Sen also rallied the Dai people to protect their crafted biospheres. Both pushed for bans on clear-cutting and chemical use. Around 2010, that movement gained more speed when village elders joined forces with the Chinese government to petition for World Heritage status. As part of the government's push, authorities put a checkpoint on the single road leading up Jingmai Mountain to stop people from bringing in non-native plants and animal species. Built a road using stones rather than asphalt, which might disrupt the aromas of the tea, and formally restricted construction and deforestation in the area. Chao Xing, a professor at Anhui University, joined the effort to help document the area's distinct cultural heritage. His government-funded team also built eco-friendly model homes to demonstrate how some modern technologies vastly improve sanitation, heating, and power while preserving the ancient architecture, something the community quickly adopted. Jingmai Mountain is like an old tea tree that has both a unique history and a powerful contemporary life force that continues to grow, he says. Around the time of their family's prayer ceremony, Ai and Ki joined the spring harvest, performed with age-old meticulous attention. Members of the Blang, Dai, and other groups wore lightweight shoes and carried large baskets gently slung across their shoulders as they carefully moved through their rugged parcels, scanning the ancient trees for the most tender shoots before carefully stepping over different branches to hand-pick them. This ensured nothing would be crushed, and the dried leaves could unfurl into a beautiful shape when finally brewed. Once their basket brimmed with fresh leaves, Ai and Ki returned home to start the intricate transformation process. They set out leaves to wither slightly, while Ki prepared firewood for the crucial steaming, or killing green step, which would stop decomposition. Ai tossed the leaves in a hot wok, arresting oxidation, and the room filled with a pleasant, nutty aroma. As the leaves cooled down, Ki began the delicate step of hand rolling, gently twisting each leaf to rupture its cells and release more flavor. After the leaves were carefully set out to dry, the tea was ready for pressing, packaging, and aging. This process yields new, purer, a tea that still requires about a decade or more of maturation to reach its peak. The 2024 harvest was significantly impacted by the drought, even though it had been saved by some labor-intensive techniques. when the pest infestation broke out, I, Key, and countless others worked tirelessly picking worms from the most important trees by hand for weeks. The infestation did not spread to other parts of the ancient forest, lending credence to the effectiveness of the partitions planted by the ancestors. In recent years, I and Key have renovated the ground floor of their wooden home to host tea ceremonies for potential buyers, pouring graceful, unbroken ribbons of tea into porcelain cups. But their story is just one example of how the market for Jingmai tea continues to flourish. Today, 90% of the region's income comes from tea. The younger generation even live streams tea tastings to a growing audience of digital devotees across China. And residents in the villages of Wenjing and Nuangang, cited by UNESCO as architectural gems, have turned their traditional wooden houses into charming shops. Some have built temperature and humidity-controlled warehouses to store tea cakes, a nod to their increasing value and a bet that in time they might evolve into valuable antiques. Last May, a rare tea cake from the province, estimated to be from 1917, fetched an astonishing $448,057 at auction in Hong Kong. Meanwhile, it seemed as if the dry spell would continue, so growers leaned into traditional beliefs to strengthen their resolve. Blang village elders tried to read chicken bones studded with toothpicks, an ancient divination ritual for climatic guidance. Members of the Dai community, which has different religious practices, implored the Buddha to intervene. The first downpour finally began in May, saturating the soil beneath the shady canopy. The rain swelled into a deluge as summer began. Jingmai remained resilient, as if by some larger design. And that completes the article. The title was, These Ancient Forests in China Produce the World's Finest Tea, by Justin Jin. This next article takes us from China into outer space. The title, The World's Largest Space Telescope Just Got an Unexpected New Role, Asteroid Hunter. Even small asteroids can do a lot of damage, and new research shows the James Webb Space Telescope is adept at spotting the tiniest of space rocks. No author was cited for the article. NASA's James Webb Space Telescope, or JWST, is a remarkable machine capable of many wondrous things. It can peer at galaxies that formed just after the Big Bang, examine distant planets, and zoom in on the worlds and moons of our own solar system. New research published this month in Nature has found that it's also surprisingly good at spying small space rocks, including some dozens of feet in length, the tiniest ever discovered in our solar system's main asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter. The JWST wasn't designed to spot undiscovered asteroids. It's more of a sniper's scope used to get a close-up look at curious objects extremely far from Earth. The average exoplanet person doesn't care about asteroids, says study co-author Artem Burdanov, a planetary scientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. To those studying far-flung galaxies and planets, space rocks are usually more of an annoyance than anything. Astrophysicists have had to deal with asteroids photobombing their data sets ever since they started using photography in the 1800s and termed them vermin of the skies as a result, says Andy Rivkin, a planetary astronomer at Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory in Maryland, who was not involved with the new study. Because asteroids kept photobombing Burdanov's views of these distant realms, he and his colleagues wondered if they could use the most advanced observatory ever constructed to do some asteroid hunting. Their results show that the JWST is good at spotting hidden space rocks by accident. This work helped to fill in astronomers' understanding of the asteroid belt, the wreckage left behind from the inner solar system's formation. And it's always nice to spy more on those rocky time capsules for future study. It's also a boon to those seeking to stop asteroids impacting Earth. After all, one of the key tenets of planetary defense is that you need to find potentially hazardous asteroids before they find us. The JWST isn't suddenly going to become a dedicated asteroid hunter, but there is definitely a role for JWST in planetary defense, says Rivkin. The glow of space rocks. The asteroids of paramount importance to planetary defenders are near-Earth asteroids, those whose orbits around the Sun bring them at least as close as 28 million miles of Earth's own orbit. Any asteroid that's at least 460 feet long is capable of destroying a large city, but those smaller than that can also cause significant damage. Even an asteroid just a few dozen feet long can, with a direct hit, wreck a city with a mid-air blast akin to a non-radioactive nuclear explosion. Frustratingly, the smaller an asteroid is, the harder it is to see. Most observatories questing after asteroids look for sunlight bouncing off them, but a small asteroid with a reflective surface looks as bright as a larger asteroid with a dimmer shell. That means that visible light is not an ideal way to determine the size of an asteroid. Ideally, you want to use a scope that can see infrared light to find these asteroids' thermal signals. A lot of these objects are so much brighter in the infrared, says study co-author Julian DeWitt, a planetary scientist at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And using infrared, a bigger asteroid always grows larger than a smaller one, no matter how reflective or dim the outer coating is, meaning infrared gives astronomers a much better idea of an asteroid's size. The JWST happens to have some impeccable infrared eyes. So DeWitt and Burdanov thought, why not see if they could use it to their advantage? To find out, they used a method first developed in the 1990s named shift and stack. Say you have multiple images of the same part of space taken by a telescope. An asteroid would show up on these images as a very faint source of light moving across these images. If you stack many shots of that faint source on top of one another while tracking it as it shifts across multiple images, you can amplify the brightness of the source, and you can determine what it is, in this case, an asteroid. The team checked to see if this shift and stack method worked using two ground-based observatories that search for exoplanets. It worked wonders. Collectively, hundreds of small bodies, from main belt asteroids to space rocks trailing Jupiter, were detected including potentially 43 new objects. Next, the team focused their method on TRAPPIST-1, a star system 40 light-years away that's home to multiple rocky exoplanets. In 10,000 pre-existing JWST images, the team found 138 new asteroids within the main belt, ranging in size from about 2,000 feet long to those just a few tens of feet across. Main asteroids in stable orbits aren't a threat, but this study shows that you can use the JWST, while it's doing other work, to opportunistically find small but hazardously sized asteroids. Then, if needed, the JWST can team up with other observatories to track these asteroids and determine if any might head our way. And it looks like we have run out of time. This article's title was "The World's Largest Space Telescope Just Got an Unexpected New Role, Asteroid Hunter." This has been the National Geographic Society program, brought to you by Sun Sounds of Arizona. My name is Chuck Berry. It's been my privilege to be your volunteer reader. The articles I've read today were published in December of 2024 by the Geographic Society. Stay well, stay safe, have a wonderful week, and keep listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. And if you missed a program you'd like to hear, go to the sunsounds.org website, click on the broadcast info and audio, then click on demand podcasts. You'll see a list of programs available to you. Hopefully you'll find the one you're looking for. Thank you so much for spending your time with me today.